This is the doctor, the therapist, and the coach on Y01 Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the doctor, the therapist, and the coach. The doctor, are you okay?
I am lovely and warm.
The therapist, how are you?
I'm laughing at the doctor's socks because she has five pairs of socks.
No one's asking you, Jem.
Coach,
how are you? Coach, how are you?
I'm very, very well. Thank you for asking. How have you been? We haven't done this for a while. How's everybody been?
The last time we did this, I was about to recover Oogie. And I was temporarily recovered, and now I'm a bit tired again.
We did a whole thing on recover Oogie. And do you feel fully recover Oogied?
I did when I arrived home for about an hour.
Oh.
But in the process of recovery oogieing, it was genuinely recovery oogie-ish. Yeah, it was really good. It was the right thing to do.
If anybody is trying to understand what recovery oogie means, you must listen to our previous podcast.
It would make it all make sense
if you did. It's one of my favourites that we did, if I'm going to be honest. Claire, how are you feeling?
I've not been very well.
Oh, no.
So I'm feeling a little bit fragile, having spent a couple of days in bed, but pleased to be here. No, it's not like me at all. I know. I don't know if it was a dodgy prawn.
I think we did, by process of elimination, after every single thing that you told me that you'd eaten over the past 5 days, did eliminate it down to a dodgy prawn.
Yeah, it was all very bodily.
Did you know it was dodgy at the time? Because I've eaten things where
really?
I've known.
I did.
It's like he's on sensors are up going, oh, this is a bad idea.
Yeah, in fact, I knew so much that I told Andy not to eat one.
Oh, gosh.
So it's like I took the hit.
You really
for him.
Took it for the team?
I did, yeah. But I did, it was a long prawn, you know, like a long buffet prawn.
Oh, God, I felt really uncomfortable.
Yeah, and it was a little bit kind of, I don't know, rubbery.
I ate a lot of prawns when I was pregnant, which you're not supposed to do, but I vomited for weeks and it was the only thing that I could. The only thing I wanted to eat was seafood.
And this we seem to have in common, the prawn and the vomiting.
This is true. But I ate so many of them that I now see them as being a bit like maggots. You know, when you get like a prawn mayo sandwich.
Andrew, this isn't helping.
Sorry.
Okay. I'm not far enough away from the last couple of days of vomiting
to think
about
this.
Yeah.
Just as a warning, if the therapist disappears during this podcast, we know where she is.
And we can expect to disappear in the next 48 hours.
Yeah. Hear a door slam. We don't have to explain.
In general, I'm feeling a bit better.
Good.
I have had a couple of days where hour-long Zoom calls were a challenge and a little bit optimistic, if I'm fair. But I'm feeling quite a bit better now, thank
you. Hashtag real life.
Yeah. I'm probably not looking my best because you're looking at me with sympathy.
I can't see you past the big microphones. I'm not. I've got compassion and care. You know me. I'm there to dire-alight you and make you better.
Yeah. I'm there to dire-alight you.
I love it. I've been really good.
How have you been, Kai?
No one's asking you questions. I've realised this is all wrong.
Yeah. Okay.
Gemma, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for asking.
It's because we're set up differently now.
I know. It's all of it.
Back to the three of us.
Back to the triangle.
Yeah.
And yes, it's very nice that I feel like I'm back in the driver's seat again and I can... And
you are a bit like a headmistress.
You feel like Miss Trunchbull.
You're like those. You can't see her, but she's swinging from side to side. Yeah. Her head is still, but her whole body is moving from side to side on a mobile. What is that chair called? A mobile chair?
A swingy chair. Isn't
swingy
it?
Chair.
A swivelly chair.
Yeah, that's a swivel.
A super office chair, though. It's dead comfy.
It's bigger than our chairs. I'm just pointing that out in this equal arrangement.
I feel like the chief. I feel like
you should have been a chief.
I think I was in a past life.
I really think that.
Good touch of the Pocahontas about you.
This
well,
is a good past lives.
Yeah.
Who was what?
Oh, I've got loads.
I don't know if I have any.
I went through regression. That is a different podcast.
I can't remember last week, let alone a last life. So I've got no idea.
I did have food poisoning in a previous life, I'm just saying. Okay.
Let's look at today. So today we are talking about luck. Now, I love a bit of luck. I'm a big believer in luck. I know that some people don't believe that
like
luck
fate.
Exists. Luck, fate. You know, what does it mean to you, Angela?
Well, I was thinking that luck is one of those perspective things. So back to when I was training, and I think everyone's seen this kind of meme, but the six in the middle and someone standing on one side and swearing blind, it's a nine, and someone's on the other side saying it's a six. I think luck can feel like that. Some of the things that have happened to me that I didn't necessarily want to happen to me have ended up pushing me in a good direction in the end. Mm. So I sometimes think that things happen to us that need to.
Yeah, it's. I absolutely agree. I think it's very much about perception and how, you know, I remember a story about two twins going through the same ordeal at home, and one twin was extremely excited about it and the other twin had an absolutely horrific time about it. And, you know, they were both of their parents were splitting up and, you know, it was really split down the middle, but they were both in exactly the same environment with a completely different perception of this experience.
It's a different lens, isn't it?
What does it mean to you, Colette?
So do I believe in luck? I think the harder you work, the luckier you seem to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people are more resilient than others and more able to see around things or see over things or see through things. And I think that can be, it can sit with how held you feel at the time. Mm. So I was having this conversation earlier with someone and I'm very loved and very cared for and very looked after. So I'm able to take chances, which then do pay off. So that can seem lucky. Or I'm able to take chances and able to take the fail because I know I'm held.
Yeah.
So that can seem lucky. It can be harder to do that and you're sort of having to stay really tightly in your lanes. I remember when my eldest two, I've got two grown-up children, when they were little, very little, I was in a less lucky position, a less fortunate position, and I was very skint, very, very skint. And I can remember only feeding them things that I absolutely knew they would eat when they were weaning, because I didn't have the money to allow them to try things that then they might not eat, because there was no way to then, you know, let them have more of that. And I think luck's a bit like that. When you've got more available to you in whatever that resource is, you can try more, cast more, play more, explore more, and therefore potentially have more coming back to you.
It's a safety net, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you say that the harder that you work, the luckier that you are.
Yeah.
And I say that in my job.
Yeah. Do you?
I do think that's true. I mean, all of us, actually, all three of us women work so hard. We work long hours, we travel a lot, all three of us do. I know that, obviously, so no, all three of us. And then people
and
people
our WhatsApp
say,
group would yeah, explain
and our WhatsApp
that.
Group would explain that. And I know that we do really cool things. Like, I'm at the Ministry of Sound tomorrow. People are like, oh my god, that's really lucky. That no, it's not. It's been months of work.
Mm.
Yeah.
Really hard work, actually. And I don't particularly want to drive to London tonight, but I'm going to.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because when I've had this internal dialogue when I was competing about how many of the competitions that I won were based on luck.
That's really interesting.
Because, you know, I remember when 8 weeks after my second son was born, I competed in the World's Strongest Woman competition in the Ukraine. Probably something I wouldn't recommend for anybody other than myself to do. And I would, if one of my clients said they were going to do it, I'd be like, absolutely not. But it was an opportunity I just didn't want to miss. And I felt really strong and really good. And I trained all the way up to the pregnancy. So it's not something that is any way healthy. But I went to the World's Strongest Woman. And I was obviously, having just given birth, I was very heavy. And my first competitor in something called a pole push, which is, if you think about a telegraph pole with two ropes on either end, it's one versus one. And I was put up against a lady that weighed 62 kilos and I did not weigh 62. I was like double that. And it was, you know, can you look at that as luck? Or can you look at that as, because I really, really wanted to be there and I'd trained all the way up to my pregnancy and I'd, you know, all the way to giving birth. And, you know, was it that I manifested that opportunity because I really wanted to place high? You know, and there is that debate about, is it luck, is it chance, or is it something that you know, you actually make happen?
Yeah. There's a speech that I really like by Tim Minchin, who I really like generally, but in it he sort of says that his argument is that there is luck, that, you know, even if you think you've made your own luck, you've been raised in a, you know, like you were saying about the sort of safety net, some of the things that we take for granted are actually things that happened by chance, but they allow us to be lucky. I do think there is such a thing as, like, you know, things, everything just lines up sometimes and it works perfectly. And, you know, you can unpick it and perhaps say that you worked really hard, but you don't know the story of the 62 kilo person either. No. He was in the exact same situation as you, but judging it from a very different perspective. So I do think perspective is probably really important in all of this.
So it was interesting as well. I was reading some research the other day about resilience and problem solving and things like that. And I can't remember enough of it to give a clear outcome, so I'm going to be a bit sketchy. But it was largely based around this idea that the offspring of the mammals who were being, so it was an animal test. So the offspring of the mammals who were being tested, I'm going to say rats because it's nearly always rats.
If they were, said ass.
No, rats.
I really rats. Heard that. Ass.
That's a very different podcast. Very different
my podcast. Ass is really resilient, no, but Colette's is not today.
No, mine is not today. Rats. And the rats who weren't nurtured or kind of really carefully looked after and kind of mothered by their caregivers, when they grew up, had better problem solving skills and were more resilient and better able to kind of, like you might say, create their own luck. So they could look at a problem and think round and therefore come to a different solution. And the end of that research kind of, there was some support that actually it would hold true for people as well. So what may appear to be an unlucky start can provide you with the skills that you need to be more resilient as adults.
Is that like the Winnicott good enough mother thing?
Yeah. So you could, so certainly like my childhood was not ideal. It was not an ideal childhood, but it definitely equipped me because I had to have skills in order to survive that.
Well, these are learned behaviours. I often think that, aren't they? You know, so the things that you do, the independence that you may have, or the, cause I tend to think I'm quite independent. I was talking to somebody today about how, you know, there's a gap in my earnings at the moment. And even though I know that I'll be fine, it's very important to me to be able to stand on my own two feet. It's, you know, I don't want to have that sense of relying on people, but that is because of a set of circumstances that I experienced in the past. And I think you do develop skills. There's that horrible saying that, you know, is it a diamond is just, you know, carbon, but with pressure and time. And the idea that if you are really sort of forced and forged, it gets the best out of you. But then that is bloody hard, that experience as well.
It is hard, yeah. So maybe luck is kind of just pre-learnt conditioning.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, I mean, maybe I would have rather had a different childhood, but actually I probably wouldn't rather be a different person than I am now, because and also I've got this amazing ability to wake up in the morning with like a completely clean Exa sketch. Do you remember those toys?
I love those.
Yeah, like my youngest daughter, we're both the same for that. We're like, oh, that's it, new day. What's today bringing?
I do find at night I tend to be more reflective and more likely to be sad at night time, but in the morning I'm always really positive and full of energy and I can go and grab the day.
I don't think I ever feel sad, not really. So I feel overwhelmed sometimes, and I feel I can feel vulnerable and a bit exposed and a bit scared. I'm quite prone to feeling a bit scared. Gemma's just nodding at me here. But I don't generally feel sad. I don't really have that. I've only really got optimism and a bit overwhelmed. That's it.
Not a bad combo.
Yeah.
There's something that I was reading about to do with premenstrual dysphoric disorder, and that overlaps with trauma.
That's
history.
PMDD.
Mm-hmm. And there's all sorts of theories that are sort of half finished about PMDD because there's not huge amounts of research that have
Before
been
you say
done
that,
in it.
When you introduced me to PMDD, which was when we were writing our book, I have seen and I've heard so many people explain. Could you just explain a little bit about what PMDD is?
You've heard people since I've said, yeah.
So since you've like opened the can of worms to PMDD,
you now see it.
I now see it all the time.
So the best way to describe it is like that it's an umbrella set of conditions, really. So the PMDD is in the DSM-5 and it's sort of, you know, defined as a disorder, though I hate the pejorative language of disorder. But the theory with it is that it's a hormone-induced change in your physical and psychological state. So, you know, mood changes and irritability, and sometimes you have more problem in your interpersonal relationships and so on. But the hallmark of it is that it sort of snaps on and snaps off. So for a period of time, it might be that you've got, you know, it might appear that you've got depression, and then it will snap and it will go off again. And most of the time it happens in the luteal phase, which is the second half of the cycle after you've ovulated, but not always.
Which we were talking about.
Literally.
Oh, were you? Okay. Without me, again, how rude. There was a pre-conversation before the podcast. So it can happen in that phase, or it can just happen in the few days before you have your period and last the few days after, or some people get it at ovulation. And then again, it can be at different times, but it tends to correlate with also having a similar mood change with certain contraceptives. So synthetic hormones, and also things like postnatal depression or postnatal psychosis. And then there's a less severe version of that, which comes under the kind of premenstrual disorders banner, which would be premenstrual syndrome, premenstrual exacerbation, which is where you have an existing diagnosis like I was going to say eczema because you're scratching your belly, but that's Colette scratching her tummy, which confused me then. Anxiety, and your anxiety may get worse on a cyclical basis, but it doesn't go away completely. That would be premenstrual exacerbation. Mm. But the point I was going to make with it is one of the theories of why more people who have PMDD may also have trauma history is something around resilience genes or genetic elements that mean that when certain experiences happen to people with PMDD, it may be more likely to imprint more negatively and for a longer period, which is quite an interesting concept and one that's a little bit difficult to hear, I think, as well.
I think so, because, I mean, people are generally designed to manage trauma, to have trauma and be resilient.
To survive.
Move on. Yeah, that's
the
what
whole
we're designed
purpose.
For. Yeah. You know, there's a big noise at the minute around trauma as though all trauma, that's the end, can't go on. But actually, mammals are designed to experience trauma and survive it and learn from it and be resilient. So I think often what we're talking about isn't trauma, it's a lack of resilience that's the problem, a lack of being able to move on, lack of being able to kind of gather oneself. But then there are conditions that make that harder. You know, I've certainly had a couple of people in the last 6 months who've come in with PMDD.
I think certainly my understanding as well with trauma is that one of the issues sometimes is the opportunity to recover from it isn't always afforded to people. I mean, that's what I think is, as you say, people, I think it's very difficult to imagine getting to a certain stage in life without some clustering of some, we often talk about big T trauma, don't we, and little T trauma. Yeah. And so there's a whole scale of things that make you feel unsafe or helpless. That's always how I try and describe trauma to people, as something that makes you feel unsafe or helpless. Yes.
But I think, again, it goes back to perception. If somebody perceives somebody to be very lucky because either they're financially stable or they look successful because they're happy, or, you know, whatever is something maybe that's lacking in them, they see somebody else that has it as lucky. I think that luck then doesn't depict how we deal with trauma, because if everybody was lucky, would that mean that we didn't deal with trauma, or is trauma a gift? You know, is trauma something that actually propels us onto a next level of being?
I think that's a really difficult concept because of the nature of certain trauma. So I think that it's really important to understand that there's a spectrum of things that happen that can come under the term of trauma, and some individual things can be absolutely horrendous. Sometimes it can be a succession of smaller periods where you felt unsafe, and it builds up over time. And I think it's very difficult to talk about it, because for a lot of people who listen, they'll be stuck somewhere in the journey of that and not out the other side of it.
Yeah.
And that's a really vulnerable place to be in. But you learn, like Colette was saying, we do develop our skills in difficult situations where we're forced to deal with them. And some of the most difficult secondary effects of traumatic experiences are often that it's equipped you with skills that keep you safe.
Yeah.
But those skills aren't actually very compatible with then being in a much more safe environment. But you're still, it's like you're wearing a raincoat and it's not raining on a sunny day.
I often see it with couples where maybe one of the pair has come out of a previous relationship which has been abusive, and now they're in a relationship which isn't abusive, but all of their mechanisms for any conflict, and not even conflict actually, but just any conversation, is to push the other person away, because they still want that person to go, because they don't feel safe in the relationship. But it's old patterning. It's not
absolutely
relevant. The other thing I see a lot, and I do it if I do any work with probably younger, slightly younger people, is when we're talking about luck and how people see things, like, you know, being envious of someone's financial success or their good looks or whatever it is, what we tend to do is judge our insides on someone else's outsides.
Yeah.
So, and social media, that is, yeah.
Yeah, and so you simply can't see the whole picture.
Absolutely.
You cannot see. I mean, you know, I'm very envious of someone's financial well-being. Oh, well, they were on a train to London at 4:30 every day, 7 days a week for 10 years.
And haven't seen their kids for 6 weeks.
I'm not sure that's luck. Mm. You know, that's a different thing, but we don't see that. And our society particularly, is very aspirational marketing. It's all of what we're kind of sold is this: someone else has got it better because this is what they've bought or this is what they're wearing.
We pathologise normal. So, you know, but even circuiting back round to trauma again, we can pathologise that experience rather than saying that actually what happened to you theory is a very useful lens to look at people's behaviour from. It makes total sense to react in a certain way to conflict if you've been threatened in the past and felt unsafe with that. It's not something that necessarily needs to have a label stuck on it.
It's not illness.
No,
it's quite the opposite, actually. Yeah. It's worse.
It's adaptive and it's saved people.
Before I came here today, I was reading a stat that, this might be a bit controversial, but it's an observation, okay, on my part. So I read a stat today that 1 in 6 UK children have a diagnosable mental health condition. Mm-hmm. Right. Surely, if we're at that level of statistic, then we have a societal problem. Mm. It's environmental. It's not of person.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we've talked before about my issue with labels, full stop. I think if you look back through the DSM criteria and you
DSM?
So it's the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, isn't it? I think is what it stands for. It's the list. But I'm not certain on the history of it, but my memory of reading about how it came about was that it was, you know, a set of maybe 100 male psychiatrists sat in a room categorising what normal looked like.
I know this.
Is this the case?
Yeah.
Broadly speaking, yeah.
And every single psychiatrist in that room had a direct link to a pharmaceutical company.
Okay.
So, it wasn't even a hidden link. And there was no... there was no set criteria. So it was like, well, how many symptoms
majority
shall
rules.
We put? Yeah. How many symptoms shall we put to create a framework for this? 2, 4, 5? Oh, yeah, let's go with 5.
Yeah.
It was kind of like that. Mm. But the massive increase in categorization, I mean, I am making this number up because I can't remember this. But
it's massive
like
70, now.
300 and something. It's... There's a guy called James Davis who's written a couple of books, and I'd say if you want to know more about it, I'd go look for his books.
I think where I was going with it is just the idea that if you start to sift out from that book behaviours that are adaptive because of things that may have happened to you in your earlier years, I think you would lose a lot of the diagnoses. And I think that's where we start to go wrong with certain things. We say, well, you're behaving weirdly. No, I'm not behaving completely rationally against my experiences. And although that may be limiting me and giving me a practical problem going forward in new relationships and experiences, that's different from saying something's wrong with me.
Yeah.
Well, I am a huge believer in feng shui. And I live my life by it. I feng shui everything, my desk, my phone, everything. So, but in feng shui, we have 3 looks. You've got your environmental look, which is your earth look. And that is where you look at where you are. It's basically your fish tank. And like you were saying before, it's, you know, look at what you're surrounding yourself in. Is that healthy? And this is like, you know,
I'm currently living in 28 kitchen units. No, it's not, Jem. It's not.
Angela has told me not to mention her kitchen.
No, I was going to say, there's a kitchen fit. It's going wrong. That's all we need to say about it. But my feng shui is very disturbed currently.
I think that we're about 2 podcasts away from talking about your kitchen.
Yeah, maybe 4.
Okay, 4.
I'm in the manual right now.
And then in feng shui,
I'm feeling a bit spiteful. I might just keep dropping it in.
I told you what I'm going to drop in if you drop that in. I've threatened you right
ladies,
back.
Ladies.
And Colette's not going to do it now.
Again. And then we've got human look, which is your mindset. And this is how, when in feng shui, you're looking at how to increase the levels of luck in your life. Because, you know, this is a 5,000-year-old principle that has been used for, you know, for obviously for 5,000 years. Shocking.
No one will believe it.
No one will.
Not with that kind of a name.
But then I think that this is where it gets a little bit woo-woo, and it talks about your heavenly look. And this is how, you know, what you're given when you come in. And I think that this really big misconception about luck being something that you're given.
Are you talking about L-O-O-K or L-U-C-K?
L-U-C-K.
I was totally thinking we all had different looks. I was thinking my heavenly look is when I'm kind of like all Farrah Fawcett hair and
yeah,
that L-U-C-K. Heavenly look. Yeah.
So heavenly look is what they believe that is in your soul.
Okay.
So you come into the life with. And then you've got your human look, which is your mindset and your thoughts.
Okay.
And everything that you can control. And then your earthly look, which is your environment.
Surroundings.
So you look at your surroundings and that's the, you know, that's how when you use feng shui, if you want to increase the look heavenly, I don't think you know, you can sort of try and increase your heavenly look doing certain things, but you're more likely to be able to increase your human look and your earthly look, which is your thoughts and your mindset and how you are living your life, but also your earthly look, which is what's in your fish tank.
Isn't it amazing how many things show up in different models and schools of what we do? Because
yeah.
That's kind of that your human look is kind of like a CBT approach,
yeah.
Really, isn't
yeah,
it?
It's,
do you know, I'm currently at the moment writing a book for my Christmas gift to people, and
I thought that had to
how long will it be?
Today?
It has, yeah.
Okay.
It's
okay.
Going to print tomorrow.
So am I going to get
it? Yeah.
Oh,
you are going to love this because it connects every single thing that I've ever learned together.
Oh.
And it's been more than a week. It's been about a decade. Over the decade that I've been writing this, it's like connecting all the dots, and then all of a sudden, they've all come together like a teepee at the top and everything is the same. You know, it's so beautiful and it's been such a lovely experience for me because, you know, your endocrine system and the chakras, they all fit together. You can put, you know, all over the endocrine organs and you can put it all over the chakra system and they're all exactly the same. We're all saying the same stuff,
yeah.
Just with different words. And you know, we're talking about luck today. For me, I don't ever feel lucky. I feel that I have created everything that I have got. What yeah. do you feel?
I feel that I paid really heavily in advance for what I have now.
Mm. Angela, what do you feel?
Actually, I think I do feel lucky. I think I've had lots of difficulties, but I've also had whatever it is that gives you inner resilience, whatever it is that kind of gives you tenacity, I've had that. And I'm lucky enough that I've got, you know, a brain that retains information and things like that that's helped me and I've been interested in things. So, but I do think of that as luck. You know, I did have to, I remember my parents used to sort of never, I don't know, they'd make a joke out of me thinking I was going to fail exams and, you know, I would do well in them. And I used to get frustrated because although I knew that I was bright, it didn't mean that I didn't have to study really hard. You don't just kind of absorb the medical facts to get, you know, or whatever. So I think I did have luck in some ways, but I have also worked hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear from the listeners. If anybody wants to tell us how lucky they feel, if they don't feel lucky at all, if we can help you with anything that you need us to help you with your luck or your not luck, we would be lovely. We would love to hear from you. And Angela, thank you very much for today. Colette, thank you very much for today.
Coach,
myself.
Thank you very much for today.
Me. Thank you. Thank you, me. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.